You're listening to the Paranormal UK Radio Network.
Yes, do you listen to the Paranormal UK Radio Network, Your Majesty?
Oh yes, most definitely, one has. Well, it'd be a very dull world otherwise, wouldn't it?
Created by Iron Allen and Mark Johnson. Twin Souls is hosted by myself, Philip, along with my twin brother, Ronald Kinsella, in association with the Paranormal UK Radio Network. Now, a warm welcome to all our listeners. And tonight we have got an exceptionally brilliant person, an author, Paul Sinclair, who's written two amazing books. And I've read the first book, and I'm kind of like started the second book. And the first book, Truth Proof, The Truth That Leaves No Proof. And his second book, Truth Proof, Beyond the Thinking Mind, Book 2. Now, Paul lives with his wife and family in the seaside town of Bridlington on the east coast of Yorkshire. And he also began his research in 2002 after creating the ILF UFO sightings website. Paul is also an artist, but I have to tell you, he is also a very meticulous researcher. Welcome on board, Paul. Nice to have you with us.
Thank you very much for inviting me to speak tonight, and it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you very much.
Well, I mean, we are so honoured to have you on board, because I'll tell you something, Paul. I saw one of your books on Amazon, and it kept standing out to me all the time, and I said, you know, I've got to get that book. So I got it, and then I think a few days later I wanted the second one. So I know that a lot of the listeners need to know a little bit about you and your work. So tell us, with regards to your UFO research and other strange paranormal phenomena, I know also that you've done your research within a 30-mile radius of where you live within Bridlington. And I've got to tell you, most of the stories in there left the hairs on my back standing up on end. Not that I have any hairs on the back of my neck, but so tell us, Paul, when did this all start? How did it start?
I've always been immersed in this subject. I think most of us have expressed an interest or been touched by it at some time in our lives. Some people sort of have an experience that is life-changing later on in life, shall we say. For me, it started at an early age, and it were difficult to speak about at first, but I've had experiences of seeing what alien might not be the word, because I don't know if they're aliens as in from space, but sure. I've seen beings from somewhere else from being a small boy. Not so much in the 2000s. I think about 1998 was the last time that I had sort of any traumatic experiences, because they've not been very good, the things that have happened to me. And you know, with the encouragement of people like Whitley Strieber,
yes,
to sort of get my medical records and everything else, and it paints a rather incredible picture. I mean, I'd like to stress also that I'm no different to any one of you or anyone listening to this show. I've just got these little cameos of events, these little captions that have stayed with me since childhood. Not hundreds and hundreds, but these events that are not dreams, they're not hallucinations, these were real traumatic happenings. And that's, Ronnie, that's what set me on the road now to absolutely full-time research. I mean, for instance, this past month, I've been going to a location in Bempton, and I realise listeners won't know this area, but it's in East Yorkshire, and I live in Bridlington, and it's about 4 miles from my home. And for the past for months, I've been going up at 5 a.m. in the morning, and earlier sometimes, and going on an evening. I mean, your friend Bob Brown's been travelling with me on an evening quite often, and I'm trying to find out what's responsible for the animal mutilations in the area. And we're not talking, I realise I might be jumping from your original question here, guys, so I apologise.
No, you carry on, Paul.
We're not talking the odd animal found sort of killed in mysterious circumstances. We're talking through 2017 to present day, over 50 sheep, a large number of roe deer, badgers, porpoise, you know, the small dolphins.
Yes.
All with similar injuries. The deer are slightly different. The deer are having huge holes blasted in their sides and there's no blood. But it's whatever's doing it, it's obliterating the rib cage and removing in the ones I've seen, half of the liver's gone. It's really strange. And I've got the photographic evidence. I mean, I think that's important to stress because, you know, I'm talking on radio. I'm just a voice in this sort of outer nowhere, and people might be thinking, well, he could just be saying this. The photographic evidence of the sheep, it's different again. It's not quite how you'd expect an alien-related or alien animal mutilation to look. These are 80-kilo ewes that are getting instantly dropped by whatever is doing it, and it's taking the throats out and the bleeding out on the spot, but then the skin's getting stripped off the face and no meat is eaten. You know, but it's a strange kind of dedication. I'm looking for answers, Ronnie and Philip, that I probably will never find, because as you know, you guys are just as involved as I am. This phenomena seems to be, I wouldn't even say one step in front of us, many steps in front of us constantly. And just when we think we've got a hold of it, it jumps off in another direction. And, you know, there's so many things been happening on this particular case that I'm looking into now that shouldn't be linked. You wouldn't expect the phenomenon, but by the closeness of location, and all within the same time frame, A has to point to B and B has to point to C. I don't know the connection. The American military were up there last year in August, and not just for a number of days, for quite some time, with Dodge Ram pickup trucks with huge green containers on the black, you know, camouflage containers with a dish on the top, pulling a trailer. And they were around, they were there the same night that me and Bob Brown saw the lights under the sea, and the same night that a guy called me while Bob was sort of there to tell me that his daughter had just seen a UFO traveling from a location called Sledmere. And interestingly, he just threw into the conversation, he said, and there's a strange a military truck parked in a field, and this is just happens to be where a UFO has been seen as well. And we'd got the military trucks on the cliff tops. We'd got the porpoise mutilations. Yes. They're just having massive trauma under their jaws, huge holes, and they're found high above the waterline. So have we got, if I dare say it, have we got a phenomena that is both airborne, land-based, and marine-based? Because there's got to be a link to these mutilations. And I do apologise, guys, because I know you asked me how I got into this, and I've just jumped to Cliff Lane.
I can assure you, Paul, I'm hooked already. We both are, and I think our listeners will, because one of the main issues, especially with Ronnie as well, and myself, is to do with the puzzle of the cattle mutilation, because we've been banging our heads against the wall for such a long time. But I think it's admirable, and this new case seems rather chilling. Bob Brown, we do know. We went on a few of his shows. He's a lovely guy. And so your interpretation, although you say you haven't made any of the links, I suspect that you've been thinking quite long and hard on this. And the UFOs, or we call them UFOs, the light phenomena, the orbs. I know that your research has led you into this fascinating subject. So do you think there's a connection between these animal mutilations and the actual light orbs that are seen
I do, yes. I think I do. I think I'd jump off the fence here and say I do. It's nice to be able to say I don't know what's responsible, but ultimately we've got to say what we think might be responsible. Now, in 2002, I started the website ILF UFO, Intelligent Light Forms, because of where we live. I mean, I'm probably 500 yards from the North Sea, but if you go inland, you've got the East Yorkshire and North Yorkshire Wolds, these large areas of open land and bits of woodland and forest. And the farmers in the area in the early 2000s up until about 2009 alerted me, or I got to know them, a few alerted me about these lights, this strange phenomena that they were seeing. But it was nothing new. I mean, as most people listening will know, that strange spheres of light have been seen since probably people first started documenting UFOs. But these lights, I mean, they're orange spheres, yellow spheres, red spheres, and it's hard to get a real hold on how far away they are. But jumping to Cliff Lane, and me and Bob had been trying to film the light forms off the cliffs. The rock anglers were better placed than anybody, and the trawlermen who fish out of Bridlington and Scarborough Harbour. And they've all seen these lights that simply just appear out of nowhere, punch instantly into a row of one, two, three, four sometimes, switch off, and then appear in a different part of the sky. Well, interestingly, I went up there with a guy called Steve Ashbridge in May. I've not got the date in front of me. Something tells me it was May the 9th, so it would have been a Wednesday. And we did a bit of an observation till about midnight, and Steve saw a gold light over the fields. Now, it wasn't quite dark. This would have been about 8:30, and I never saw it, but I trust Steve's word. We've sort of looked into this for a lot of years, and if he can discount something or prove something is sort of of earthly phenomena or earthly origin, he will be the first to say. But it was strange because it just showed up, this light. He saw it two, three times, and then it vanished. What was odd, at 10 p.m., all the sheep in the lower fields started, something was amongst them and disturbing them. And this was the first sheep death of 2018.
Good Lord.
Now, because on the Saturday morning, I found myself up at the farm, and that I found a roe deer with the huge hole in its side. It had not been dead long. It was underneath a fallen hawthorn tree, and I took quite a lot of images. And when I say a fallen tree, it had gone on its side, leaving a 2-foot gap, and the bough of the tree had got lots of shoots coming off it, which formed a canopy. And this roe deer stag, young stag, was underneath there. It weighed about 100 pounds. And I took the pictures, and then as I'm walking back to my vehicle, the farmer came out of his farmhouse, asked me how things were going, and I showed him the images, and he said, "Oh, another sheep were killed with the same MO as 2017. I said, "All right, when was that?" He says, "We found it Thursday morning." Now, I found that intriguing, that we'd seen this strange gold light on the cliff tops quite close to where this field was, and then the sheep were being disturbed. And I said to Steve, "So let's make a note of the time." And it was 10 p.m. when the sheep were sort of being, something were upsetting them. And we can't say, "Oh, the light is responsible for the sheep death." But interestingly, Thursday morning, they found another sheep, throat torn out, just left there. Nothing's eating these animals. The police have been involved. They've sat there with night scopes, hoping to catch it in the early days of 2017, simply because they thought a predator were doing it and it would come back to feed on the carcass, only to find at daylight another one's been done and nobody's seen a thing. So it's highly unusual. The badgers, it just don't add up. The badgers are skinned and they look like they've got little fur trousers on, because they're skinned around the middle. The heads have been removed. I've never really seen anything like this. And the dolphins, you know, the harbour porpoise, I've failed to understand. I've seen both. We're having friends who've got trawlers and that. I've seen seals that have been hit by a trawler with propeller and they get these spiral wounds. And you've seen dolphins as well. But this is different. These are holes straight through the jaws or below the jaws. I just don't understand what's at work creating these horrific injuries.
Right.
I also received a envelope with a lot of strange reports in it from a retired trawlerman of many years. This guy didn't fish out of eastern North Yorkshire. He lived in Hull, but he fished in the Arctic and the Barents Sea, and, you know, he was a skipper. And during his long career on the ships, he noted a few things and made a private sort of little notebook of the unexplained. And I met him just after Christmas, and he fetched me an envelope with about 14 separate white pieces of paper with sketches on that he'd done. In fact, Bob Brown met him with me, and most interesting guy. But he came out with one story from 1973. I didn't think I'd be onto this, and I ain't got it in front of me, but I'll do my best. He was supplying parts for oil rigs, and he had to pass Flamborough Head. Now, listeners, Flamborough Head is probably 3 miles from Bempton, where all this activity is going off.
Yes.
Now, he gave the latitude and the longitude of on this drawing, and from that, I've worked it out, and he was 6 miles off Bempton when this occurred, roughly in the place that we are doing our observations, trying to film the light forms which keep occurring over the sea. I must say, listeners, with no great regularity, if this phenomena performed to order, it wouldn't be unexplained. As you know, I'm not trying to teach anybody anything here. We all know this. Yeah. It's just that this area has the ability to produce highly unusual phenomena, and it's worth observing, even if you spend a year looking and nothing happens, because you know when it does happen, it's going to be blooming good. So this guy's 6 miles off Flamborough Head, off Bempton approximately, and he reports that there's two green lights at eye line on the cliff tops. This is the report he gave me. Now, the cliffs are about 300 foot sheer. You can't climb down the cliffs at Bempton. They range from 250 to 400. And he says, two green lights at eye line, three green lights in air above cliff top, a triangle of green lights. Then he'd got a white glow from the cliff face, from the sea, lighting the cliff face up, the chalk cliffs, but no visible signs of any boats or any activity, just these lights. And then he'd got blue lights going up and down in like a spinning spiral up the cliffs. And so he'd made notes of all this in his log. And then the most interesting observation, two sheep in water, no throats.
Oh.
Yeah, seriously, you know, and I thought, wow. And this was April, I don't know the date, I do, but I haven't got it off top of my head. This was April 1973. And I'd like to bet that this phenomena has been going, or things of a similar nature have been occurring way before we first started documenting anything. And I just find it amazing that so many people have seen these lights. Coast Guard, lifeboatmen.
Yes.
And I've had access now, Ronnie, to Coast Guard and lifeboat logs. And I suggest any listeners, if they ever get the chance, or yourselves, to look at these logs. I don't think we're supposed to look at them. The Coast Guard ones I looked at and I returned. I've not kept anything. But you'll find call-outs to unresolved lights over the North Sea or over the sea where you live. I promise you will find these call-outs. 9-hour call-outs to flares that never were. 4-hour call-outs. Members of the public who've reported them. Police officers. Coast Guard themselves. Something is at work.
Yes.
But what we've got in the Coast Guard and the lifeboat logs, guys, is a... unknowingly to these, there's no cover up with these guys. They've not done anything to suppress it, but they've actually documented the unexplained phenomena for us. And we, you know, if as a collective we could start looking into these logs or try and get access to some of them, we will find it. I know that not every unexplained light in the sky is going to be some kind of wonderful magical mystery, but when you've got experienced trawlermen, when you've got police officers, when you've got Coast Guard and members of the public reporting seeing unexplained lights over the sea, and all they can say is suspected flares, strange
yes.
They never, and you know, the reports that cover 3 pages, and usually there's a first page is just the report itself, then the second page is as much detail as they can add, and then the third page will be just the conclusions, and it'll just say unresolved or a line through it, and it seems acceptable That's the bit I find frustrating. Yes. The official bodies just think it's acceptable just to write it off unresolved, because yes. they dare say that we've got a genuine unexplained phenomena at work here. And I believe we have.
I was going to say, Paul, that this is quite an old phenomenon, because I do know that Philip and I researched the Dyatlov incident, the Pars incident, where we had in the Soviet Union in 1959, when we had, I think 9 skiers. They were found dead, professional skiers, in the 1st of February 1959. It was near something called the... Let me have a look. Is the mountain?
Is the mountain of the Dyatlov Pass?
That's right. Yeah. And they covered it up. They covered it up with military precision. The bodies were buried in lead coffins. There were 9 of them. They've said that 9 were dead from hypothermia and physical trauma. But what's interesting is that prior to this disgraceful incident, where they actually cut their way from the inside of the tent out because they were terrified at the early hours of the morning, there were reported orbs of colored lights in the area by the natives, and these people were found with eye sockets, their eye sockets, their jaws were exposed. They had had disgraceful trauma. They looked like they had been basically operated on in the most crudest manner I could put it, I suppose, but unknown to man at the time. And it seems like they were dropped from something. They were all dropped, or most of them were dropped. Their fingers were bare, because where they were trying to climb trees from this aerial mystery that caught them. So what you're saying is quite, it rings a bell, especially with that, because this has not only happened to cattle, it's happened to people too.
So true. And I believe that some of the 9 had had the tongues removed as well, hadn't they?
That's right.
They named it the Dyatlov Pass incident because of the Ed Guide, I think. I can't remember his first name, but it was Dyatlov. What a fabulous story that is. Obviously a traumatic story and a sad story for the people involved, but absolutely it rings true. And you know, it just makes you wonder what the nature of these lights are, don't it? You know, in the same area we've had people going missing. And I've tried to deal with it as respectfully as I can, because obviously we're dealing with someone, relatives or people who've got lost loved ones, but it's unresolved. And I've not tried not to speak about anybody that's had a history of trauma or a depression, or suggested that they may want to take their own lives. The ones that I've dealt with, or the ones that I've written about, have been people who've, for the best part, or for my best of my knowledge, have been quite well adjusted, and they've just gone for a day's walk and they've never been seen again. I mean, that's quite incredible. One of the guys went to Bempton for a walk to the nature reserve. Edward Matchin, I believe they called him. I mean, I've got the details in front of me. I think something tells me it was 2013. And he disappeared. He's never been seen since. But what is interesting is 7 days later, 16 miles up the coast, but it jumped from East Yorkshire to North Yorkshire, a guy went fishing with he took his 2 spaniel dogs with him, and vanished, never been seen again. And it seems like North Yorkshire Police and East Yorkshire Police, I'm sure they've not put this together. I contacted the Missing Persons Bureau, and if anyone looks into missing people, you will see, let's assume that Paul Sinclair goes missing. I go missing in Scotland. It will not be down as I've gone missing in Scotland. It will be down as Paul Sinclair from Bridlington. And I contacted them and I says, do you realise you've East Yorkshire, East and North Yorkshire, you've got this list of people, and quite a large number of them have gone missing from Bempton, but nothing in your literature says that. And they said, well, we don't, that's not how we do it. I says, but you're missing a trick here. There's something at work. I never spoke about unexplained phenomena or anything. It was just the fact that when you look at the list, all these men on it, and the men, you can use 2 hands, full, that are from East Yorkshire and Bempton. Well, from Bempton primarily. And to me, it sticks out that this we've got something serious happening here.
Yes. I also think, Paul, sorry to interrupt, that with regards to your research with regards to the light phenomena, that is very interesting because you're kind of like bordering along the lines of what we're thinking here as well and have been for some time, that, you know, the physical strong construct of UFOs is not all myth, but a great many of it is, because this phenomena operates through energy or intelligent energy. And what's interesting also, I wanted to ask you, the different colours, because I know that taking it slightly out of the box, that psychic mediums sometimes see these orbs around people, different colours like blues, whites, yellows. They seem to be on a different energy or more positive energy vibration link, but the light phenomena that you've been reporting and also experienced yourself seems to work on a very negative field of energy. So I understand from your research and your books that, you know, although you say you haven't got the pieces, I believe that you have got some of them, because you've made more people aware of exactly putting the pieces together, like Sherlock Holmes, and formulating a conclusion that these lights are somehow responsible for what's going on. What do you personally believe that these lights are? What's your opinion about them?
I don't think there's any structured craft behind these lights.
No.
It's not to say, but obviously, what we're dealing with here is personal opinion, and thank you for saying it like that, because none of us are experts, me certainly not. But no. I believe that we're looking at some kind of intelligent energy, if that's not too much of a leap in the dark, because there's some kind of awareness to them, in particularly the ones that we observed on the East Yorkshire Wolds. There was a farmer up near Staxton Wold, near the old RAF base. I call it the old, it's still operational. RAF Staxton Wold is the oldest operational RAF base in the world. And he's now retired, and him and his wife now devote their life to filming these objects. And I would believe that this guy's probably got more footage than anybody in the world. And he's got cameras on cams in every upstairs room, sweeping constantly, day and night. And this guy's just obsessed. But he noted, and I noted, that you can sort of be sort of looking, there's a buzz in the air, and you can be looking for these things, and suddenly one will appear. And yes. I don't know whether we're imagining it or it's just sheer coincidence. I mean, there's been many instances where me and Steve Ashbridge have sat with cameras on tripods ready, hoping this phenomena will present. And then it's probably got to, we've been there since 7, and it's got to 10, 30, 11, and we thought, right, we've had enough of this. Pack the cameras away, and Steve's famous words would be, you watch, it'll show. And sure enough, the phenomena shows. Now, I don't know whether this is sheer coincidence, but it seems to have happened on far too many occasions. I think there's some kind of awareness. One example I could give is a rock angler that was fishing at Bempton off the cliffs. Believe it or not, guys, they fish off these 300-foot cliffs straight down into the North Sea. And the sheer, they rope themselves on, and how they manage to get a fish up them cliffs, but they do. However, this guy, first-hand account, I think we're looking at about, I can't remember the exact date, probably 2009, 2010. He's up there, it's November. The bird sanctuary was just closing up.
Oh, yes.
And he's sat on the cliff tops, and he's looking out to sea. It's a beautiful star-filled night, and he noticed there's a star that he can't recall seeing before, a large, bright star out up in the heavens, obviously, in the heavens. He said, but as soon as I connected it with it, as soon as I looked at it, it was almost as though it was on me. He said, and suddenly, everything around me filled up with light that made the earth look like, just like a welder's light. It was just absolutely incredible. And he said, and then, so obviously this wasn't a star, you know, because it's just the impossibility of it. But he saw this object that he perceived as a star in the heavens. He said, and I sent to just connect with it. He says, and instantly, like some kind of intermind connection, he says, it's on me. Everything lit up, few seconds, and then everything had just, it just went literally like a firework. It had gone, leaving a trail. He packed his things up needless to say, and were down at the car park, and he went home. It frightened him to death. So what are we dealing with? You know, there's a guy called Andy Barmby who likes to fish for bass, and he was in Thornwick Bay, which is just to the right of Bempton, but only a few miles down the coast, and he's in a little cove after 10 o'clock at night on his own. And remember, these areas are so desolate and remote, you know, even in the height of summer you'll not get a lot of people round them at that time of night, and in winter you get nobody and it's late.
Yes.
He said, and I'm fishing for bass, very still night, he says, I'm just sort of doing my own thing, and two globes of light lit up off the cliff face, but below the cliffs, large orange spheres. He said they were as big as cars. He says, and they're not far away, and he's observing them and thinking, what could they be? There's absolutely no sound, and he's looking at them, and they're just switched off. And then he just carried on fishing. I mean, I've actually been speaking to Andy tonight, funnily enough. But anyway, he carried on fishing. They came on again. He said, I just packed my gear up and left. And I often wonder what would happen if anybody got an up close and personal encounter with these lights. We've got reports, more than one report, of a large luminous mass on the cliff path. It almost looks like a mushroom with lights punching out all around the inside of it, but not. You can't see an actual light. You can just see lights inside this cloudy mushroom of a mass, and obviously it's a single track path, and I wonder what would happen. I mean, I've had a few reports of this where people have seen it, one particularly from a guy in Bempton and a guy in Flamborough, and they just turned and went the other way. It unnerved them so much. But what if somebody didn't? What are we actually dealing with? This is the same area, guys, where in, I think it was 1963, you might be able to correct me here. Can you remember when the craters appeared all over the UK? The Charlton crater, in July of 1963, craters appeared all over the UK, in Lanarkshire and all everywhere. And because of the lack of obviously social media and press, nobody really found out about this. You know, the actual locations reported it at the time, but we had one on the cliff tops at Flamborough, and wow. Patrick Moore came to these craters with the MOD and Geiger counters. Patrick Moore's job was to dispel the myth of little green men. Now, I actually managed to interview Colin Hood, who in 1963 was a young man who went to cut hay on his dad's farm at the top of the cliffs at Flamborough, the Hood farm. And when he came back, this crater had appeared. And the army put it down to lightning hitting a pocket of gas on the top of the cliffs.
That's ridiculous.
Absolutely. And then I found another guy who was still alive now, 94 years old, and he used to work for a company that removed earth, gravel, and he was removing earth from a large burial mound, which you would never get away with now, called Beacon Hill in Flamborough. And when the Hood crater appeared, because it made the local papers, we can find reference to it online. Anybody that wants to look at the craters, you will find the Flamborough crater and reference to it online, along with all the others. I think the Charlton crater and the Dufton Fell crater were the most prominent ones to make the news, because Flamborough is just a tiny place. But, however, the guy removing earth and gravel found another one at Bempton. And he directed me to it, and I've measured it. It was 63 feet in circumference, and I've put a string line across it. And I think somebody had filled part of it in, but it was still 6 foot deep. Mm. And I took loads of pictures of the crater, but what's interesting is it's filled in now. Mm. You know, it's strange. You know, maybe it's, once again, is are we just dealing with coincidence? But it stood all those years since 1963, and I think it got filled in last year. You wouldn't even know it had ever been there.
There's definitely a connection with the orbs and the cattle, the animals being mutilated. I think it's very dark and very disturbing. It's very worrying. Now, where we have to be quite logical, these animals are constantly being attacked. And so it seems to me, or to my mind, that whatever these things are, they need something from them, or, you know, that's the only thing I can think of. They need something from them, which is very worrying, isn't it, Paul? It's very dark. They are, I'm absolutely convinced, they are connected.
I totally agree. Absolutely agree entirely. But what's strange is that the sheep are getting bled out. Or at least we believe they are. I mean, there's no pools of blood, but there's a dark area when you get to it. The deer that had had this huge hole smashed into its side, it was just incredible. But the internal organs looked absolutely pristine, except half of its liver, which was missing. And I spent ages, well over an hour with this carcass, turning it over by the antlers, holding it and going through its fur with a piece of wood, looking for any signs of puncture marks, any signs of scratches, trauma, nothing. Yet, and if it had been a fox that had caught this, which I can't imagine it would have done anyway, it wouldn't have gone through the ribs. The ribs were literally just smashed to bits. It was just such a strange... It's almost as though we've got different elements of some phenomena at work. I've often wondered, you know, in these areas of high strangeness, if whether the area attracts unexplained phenomena or throws it out. And are we dealing with more than one phenomena? Is it some kind of chameleon? Well, I've been told quite recently, jumping to the military and the military that were at Bempton, primarily through July 2017, Air Forces Monthly, a magazine that can be bought off most newsstands and major sort of news agents in the UK and Scotland, I would think. Someone else took an interest and took a picture and sent it to Air Forces Monthly of these objects, of these vehicles. Mm-hmm. And the editorial staff there were of the opinion that they may have been SAM emulators, surface-to-air missile emulators. Now, my contacts in the military tell me that it was microwave technology that was on top of those units. But now, to further back this up, I've been told only a few days ago that it was definitely microwave technology, and they were there to track fast-moving underwater objects. Now, I've got to be careful because I don't want to disclose who's told me this, because it involved Menmouth Hill and a few other things, and so I'm not going to jeopardize anybody by divulging that. No. But you know, it just makes you wonder. You know, you've got the military there, you've got people ringing up about telling you that they've seen their daughter's seen a UFO, and then you've got the same guy telling you that there's a strange military unit or truck parked with a dish on the top. Now, this story started in June the 15th of 2017, when a chap contacted me to tell me that a triangular-shaped depression had appeared in a pea field, a pea crop, that wasn't there the day before. And I went up on the next morning at 6 a.m. with him, and we looked, and there was nothing there, no vegetation, nothing, and you've got this wonderful triangular shape in the pea crop. Incidentally, the pea crop was next to a lane called Blake Lane. Blake in Bempton terminology means black, you know, like it's their dialect.
Yes. So
Blake, what is interesting is the military trucks were parked on Blake Lane. Do you know? So yeah. It's just, I mean, and I do have the pictures of the military trucks as well. Mm-hmm. And I've got the images I've got of the sheep are all from the actual farmer. I've got obtained the deer images, but it just begs the question, what's going off? I mean, anybody who knows me would realize that me and mobile phones and technology don't work too good. And my daughter gave me an HTC phone, which needed unlocking. So this particular day, it was late on in the year. It was a bright, sunny day, but very cold. And we went to have the phone unlocked. The reason I'm saying very cold will make sense in a minute. As we left our door, the bottom of the street fans out in either side in a large, wide arc, both sides of the road, and there's a barber's shop opposite and a news agent. And there's a guy at the opposite side of the road with his shirt off, sat or leaning against the wall with a very old bike, a very old green bike, the kind of bike that you'd see in them old adverts, the bread adverts. And you know what I mean? So yeah. As soon as I walked out, he shouted me. And I thought you were talking about the weather. I knew what he was saying now, and he's saying, you're bringing down the light, you know what you're doing. But I looked over and I said, it's quite a wide street and there's no one around. And I said, yeah, you enjoy the sunshine, mate. We're not going to have much more of it now, because I'm thinking the fool's got his shirt off in this weather. It's cold, actually. He kept shouting, you know what you're doing. You're bringing down the light. You have to stop. So I carried on walking around the corner. We took the phone to this shop to be unlocked. And I don't know, 10 minutes later, he said, come back in a while, an hour or two. And 10 minutes later, we're off back round to our house. Now the guy's on the other side of the road, our side, and he's put a jumper on, a tight-fitting brown jumper. He's left his bike at the other side of the road, and me and Mary are walking down, and I knew it were him instantly. Bald head, this guy. Very muscular, but he looked like an action man. There were no vascularity. Were just, so in a way, I'm contradicting myself. Everything looked in shape like an action man would, but there was no sort of detail to the muscle. And he had the skin texture of Spam. So I said, oh no, there's that bloke there again, sort of thing, to Mary. And before we turned round, before we got to him, he turned round, he'd got full wraparound sunglasses on, and he went, you know what you're doing. You have to stop. I said, excuse me. He says, you know what you're doing. You're bringing down the light. You must stop. And I don't know why I don't know why I stayed and spoke with the guy. I don't understand this to this day. And so I'm facing him. My wife's to the right of him. And he's telling me this constantly, and I'm trying to fathom out, and I'm trying to sort of outwit him. And I were asking him questions, but I couldn't. This guy was far too clever for me, and he were even answering what I were asking him. It's so hard to explain. And at one point he put his hand on Mary's shoulder.
Yes.
And I looked at this guy, and I'm not a violent person, but I will always look after myself, or I used to do. I'm 55 years old now, but and I knew, and he knew, if I'd have touched him, there'd have been conflict.
Yes.
And I looked, and he looked like, I don't know, he probably were about, I'd have said, if I had to guess an age, 35, 37. I'm thinking, I don't need this. And he says, I'm not talking to her, I'm talking to you. You know what you are doing. You have to stop bringing down the light. So with that, I just sort of said, come on, Mary, we're going home. He's still shouting at me, and we went home, and Mary said, he frightened me, that man. Do you think he was an alien? No, he's never said anything like that, ever.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, a few days later, the barber came over, bumped into me, the guy at the barber's shop, and said, who were that guy that were waiting for you? I says, what do you mean? He says, well, he'd been sat there. He says, and soon as you came out of your gate, he made a beeline, his turn, because we were watching him, because he looked so unusual. So there was some kind of connection.
Yes.
I need to end the story. I asked him where he was from, and he said, Rickle. Now, I didn't know where Rickle was. It's in North Yorkshire, and it's about 50 miles away from where we are now. And when we got home, we couldn't remember where he said he was from. I asked her to Mary, I said, where did he say he was from? She says, I can't remember. So a few weeks later, there's a missing man. Bempton packed his camper van up, gone for the day.
Yes.
Vanished.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
From Rickle.
Oh.
As soon as the paper said Rickle, I said, that's where that guy said he was from. Mary agreed. And now, it wasn't the same man. I must stress, it was not the same man. This guy who went missing had ginger hair and glasses. Mm-hmm. This guy were bald. But I just thought, what are the chances? And Mary made another observation, because I didn't... she was facing the wall where his bike was. She said, did you see his bike? I said, what do you mean? She said, it had no brakes, front or back. He travelled 50 miles. It's such an unusual man. But, you know, none of us are strangers that were probably listening to this and your shows to the unusual. You know, I've got scars on my arms. I've scars on my back that have appeared overnight. That's why Whitley said, get your medical records. You must look into this.
Yes.
And it tells an incredible story. And even though it's about myself, it is true. I mean...
Well, it's changed your life completely. I mean, the thing is, though, now that you're focused upon the research, obviously I believe that with all of us there, we have our paths in life. And my belief is that this is only a small part of life that we go on. And that there's intent through why we do what we do. But I think because you've certainly, your eyes have been open to a lot of the mysteries. And what I love about your research and your books is you're no nonsense. You get to the like us, we know nonsense. We don't dilly dally with rubbish. But the other thing that I found really amazing in here in your first book. As I said, I've started the second book. It's absolutely amazing. But the pictures of the apparent-looking alien that was taken by a couple, a daughter of the mother, and they lived in a bungalow, I believed, and they were out and they'd seen these orbs, these lights coming, and then the next thing in a bungalow, the lights were upon their house, and then they were so frightened they felt trapped inside their house. And then the young lady took a picture through the kitchen window, but not looking up. And you've got these wonderful pictures of what looks to me, or similar to, a grey.
Very true. Absolutely incredible story.
Yes.
Sandra Walton, who, obviously she'd not married, and Muriel Rowbottom, the mum. I would love it if Muriel was still alive. She was elderly when we spoke to her, and it's quite a lot of years ago. Mm. And we went through to Knaresborough to meet both of them and so to do a little interview with them. And it were absolutely life-changing for these ladies. They'd lived in Sproatley, which is near Witherensea, on the coast once again, and on a chicken farm. And I think Sandra was doing the pots at the kitchen sink, looking onto open fields, and she saw some lights which were quite intriguing, and she opened the back door and looked at these lights and shouted a mum, and a mum come and looked, and they were absolutely intrigued. Sandra said, wait there, mum, I'm going to go up and get a camera. And it was the kind of camera everybody will remember, and perhaps if you're old enough, with the square flash that every time you took a picture, it turned.
Yes.
and she snapped a picture from the front door. And instantly she snapped the picture. These lights just moved straight forward. And they were in the field in front of them. I don't mean 10 foot away, but they were in the field in front of them, you know, because they were looking at these lights over a vast distance. Mm-hmm. And at one time they talked about them looking like a rack of snooker balls that were turning, and they spoke about them looking like eyes. And there was one with a shutter. And what I like about I don't mean everybody tells the truth, but when you sort of realize that somebody's on the money, when they actually can't describe what they're looking at, because we lack the vocabulary to actually describe some of the things that we're seeing, because we're trying to describe it in terms that only earthly things that we actually know exist, and some of these things are far beyond our understanding. Mm. And we don't have the vocabulary. And Muriel and Sandra shut the door and hid in the corners of the kitchen, and I think Sandra said she could hear noise outside, and she crawled along the kitchen floor and lifted the camera up and took a few pictures. And those pictures, Ronnie and Philip, are what I took of her own pictures.
Yes.
They were very guarded over these pictures because another UFO investigator, no names mentioned, but apparently had visited them, and he tried to steal the negatives. And this come out with something else that was so interesting. They showed me and Steve Ashbridge the negatives, and Steve will back me up on this. We never saw anything, by the way, but she said, we've seen a crucifix floating in the negative.
Oh, good.
I don't know what that means, guys. I'm just relating what this lady said.
Yeah.
And it had such a profound effect on the pair of them that Sandra believed that I think it's just culture and an age thing. Sandra believed that they were aliens and something visiting from another planet. Muriel believed it was biblical and they were angels. And I think that's just I think they were both they'd both seen something. They'd both probably seen the same thing, but life had shaped them in different directions due to the age.
I was going to ask you also, Paul, I mean, I know that you're in touch with Whitley Strieber, and I always have, my brother and I have always admired his coming out with regards to the communion, and I've always respected him as an author and struggling to deal with this. And what's interesting is that with your books as well, I've got to ask this question, a burning question, please tell me, are you working on another book, Paul?
I'm working on two. I started one called The Night People.
Wow.
And it were the Night People was entirely about my own experiences from childhood to now. And I'm 50,000 words into Night People, but I started that way back in 2017, and it would have been done now. But as soon as this Cliff Lane story started, as soon as we started realizing that there was something to it, I stopped. And I wanted to document this phenomena as it was going. And now I've probably 60,000 words into Truth Proof 3, we're going to call it Truth Proof. You know what I mean? I haven't got a title for it yet, I can't believe that this... I mean, you don't mind if I say another radio station?
No, go ahead.
I spoke on Midnight in the Desert a few weeks ago, and they wanted 20 questions, and we spoke for over 3 hours just about Cliff Lane. We didn't get to any more questions apart from Cliff Lane. I were amazed myself, to be honest. But so it's to me, it's an awesome story, and it's happening as we speak, which is fabulous. I mean, I don't know what the conclusions will be at 5 a.m. in the morning. I will be up there. I will be on that field. I don't know what I'm expecting to see, guys. You know, it's just that if we've not got feet on the ground, if we're not asking the questions, we're not going to get the answers from this phenomena sat looking at a computer screen.
No, I totally agree with you. And sorry, Ronnie, you were going to say?
As I absolutely concur with Paul, because I think what we're dealing with, what you're dealing with or seeing, as we have been, we know has been documented so many times, is something very dark. And also, putting on the Sherlock Holmes cap, I think what these cattle mutilations are continuous and they are persistent. And of course, the governments will play it down. They will not reveal the statistics. They will not reveal the truth. It will always be covered up. Now, it could be possible that they are guarding us from a terrible secret. I think they are. But one thing is certain. These things continuously do this for a reason. It's as if they need something from them. I'm not saying they're vampires. I'm not saying that. But they're either looking for something, they're looking at something, or they need something. Would you agree with that, Paul?
I would agree, and I'm glad you've brought that up. I realise we're tight for time, but I don't just mean the physical attributes of the cattle or the sheep or the humans. Do you think there's something within us that they require?
Because
don't you think that times of trauma and at times of great elation, strange unexplained phenomena occur in people's homes? A great loss, bereavement. People seem to experience strange phenomena. It's almost as though we're just tuned into a slightly different level that's allowing this phenomena to access it, or that to access us. I've noticed that this, you know, when you, everybody's experienced this, this like shiver of emotion when something touches you or you've said something. And I think that, as corny as that might sound, I think that wave of emotion,
yes, definitely,
connects and to these things.
Yeah.
I hope some people can understand that, because I don't quite know how to express that.
I totally agree with you, because in my understanding and Ronnie's, with regards to the research we've been doing on the greys, the abduction phenomena especially, and also the soul, it seems that these things are devoid of the very attributes that we have that they themselves are denied. And there could be a program that's in place by these intelligences trying to replicate or redeem themselves on some level. We will never know. But our show is coming to an end, and I think, Paul, it's only fair that we have to thank you so much. And would you also come back on our show again later for a catch-up? Is that okay?
I would absolutely love to. It's been a pleasure.
I just want to tell all our listeners, I'm so proud, Ronnie and I are both so proud to have you on board. Hey, Ronnie?
That absolutely. I mean, this has been fascinating, and also very, very dark. It is echoes of an incidences which are occurring globally, and it's quite worrying. And I admire people like Paul who are going out there and researching it and trying to get answers.
Because it's really weird, isn't it? I was on Amazon and I go through all of the books every time, UFOs, paranormal, and some books stand out to you, and I kept seeing all these wonderful reviews, and I thought, I've got to get that author on our show. He's got to come on our show, Roddy. And then in the back of the book, it's you can contact Paul. So, Paul, tell our listeners, first of all, how they can get in touch with you.
Well, anybody can get in touch with me. I'll answer them if I'm able or if I get a good a message. So, Paul Sinclair, ILF@gmail.com. That's my email address, obviously. And the books are available on Amazon. Anybody just type into the search engine Truthproof and you're going to find them. There's a website, and I have to apologize, I'm not that into the computer, I'm more into the research, but it's truthproof.webs.com, and they could be purchased via PayPal. But as I say, anybody that wants to contact me, I'm more than happy to share information or listen. You know, I'm always looking for new stories, new information, as you guys will be as well. Mm-hmm. And I honestly, I treat people with the respect that I expect back. You know,
absolutely, totally. And you've
yes,
got
the... I'd like to ask Paul, are you going to be illustrating this new book of yours? Because I'm hoping we're going to have some of your wonderful paintings in there.
I will be doing, yes, yeah.
Ah, yes. And do you know, Paul, I've got to say, we will have you back on our show later in the future, because there's so much to discuss. An hour is just a drop, and I've literally been so spellbound listening to your stories. And thank you so much for coming on board. Just for our listeners, please go out and buy Truth Proof, The Truth That Leaves No Proof, Book 1, and Truth Proof, Beyond the Thinking Mind, Book 2. You will not be disappointed. I can guarantee once you start reading those books, you will find them absolutely amazing. We wish you the very best of luck, Paul, in your research and your continual digging into the truth, like Mulder from The X-Files. It's all I have to say now is that thank you very much for all our listeners for tuning in, for Ronnie for coming on board as always, and again to Paul.
Well, thank you.
You're very welcome. And you've been listening to the Paranormal UK Radio in association with The Network and Twin Souls.
And here is a trailer from our book, The Rock Bottom Twins and the Rise of Ramshack.
Man's very empire shall briskly be swept aside in favour of a new order. Reign of the robots, a world of industry, progression and power. We shall put the great back into Britain, and the other countries will fall under the weight of our might. All the islands of this planet will crumble as we nullify the human way. We shall start by leveling London, the base of operations in a building known as the House of Commons. It will be demolished with a terrific loud bang. The Prime Minister, his cabinet, and all those in power will be reduced to dust as its vast area is scattered to oblivion. We can then recreate the city and call it Londonia, the seat of our power, a new administration, my own and superior parliament. The weapon employed for this will be called Slicent. When Slicent is launched, it will be undetectable to any human tracking system. The assault will be a complete surprise. Its first target will be the House of Commons, and a fitting destination for our glittering weapon. When the humans are closing their best and fast asleep, especially the Prime Minister and his cronies, Slicent will fall from the sky and blast their precious city to atoms. Even Big Ben, the ancient timepiece which graces the government's seat of power, will fall as we eradicate the nasty creatures who believe this world to be theirs. This will leave the globe thwarted and shaken before we fire a second, and a third, and a fourth, and so on, and so on, and so on.